All right. Good evening. Okay, the topic I wanted to discuss tonight, to everyone here, is the topic I said, I think, hearing aids and cochlear implants on Shabbos, problems that come about from those two things. Now, there are other hearing devices. From what I'm aware, there's something called Baha, there's something called ABI. Those are a little more specific and particular. We're not going to discuss that, nor are we going to discuss every issue that comes up on Shabbos with these devices. We just don't have the time, especially because we started a few minutes late, to discuss. So we're going to see how far we get in terms of what we discuss, but there definitely are a bunch of interesting topics that come about, interesting issues and sugyas to discuss as it pertains to these hearing devices. So, in terms of just where we are in terms of what is a hearing aid and what is a cochlear implant, so I assume you guys know basically what they are. So, a hearing aid is generally used for someone who has mild to somewhat severe hearing loss. Again, you would have to go to your doctor, specifically to your audiologist. My sister is an audiologist in Jacoby, so I got a lot of information about this stuff from her. What? Do you need one? Okay, I'll ask. You really do? Okay, great. Okay, Felina there. I'll let me know after. I'll send her a text and get you an appointment. Okay, so but either way, what a hearing aid basically does is it has a mic. It goes in your ear, obviously. It has a microphone. The microphone picks up the sound. It goes to the receiver, and the receiver sends it to the amplifier, and that's basically what a hearing aid does. It amplifies acoustic sounds. Now, it is electric, obviously, but what's important, we'll probably end up discussing next week just as it relates to the Purim, different mitzvos, whether you can fulfill them with, you know, hearing aids of different sorts. But obviously this is an important factor, that nothing's changed. It's the same sound, it's just an acoustic, so that the person can actually hear it. There are differences. Obviously, companies make different types. Generally speaking, and we probably won't even discuss this, but a lot of times children's hearing aids have a light on it, and the light basically turns on when the battery's dying. Or when you're an adult, you can realize when your battery died and you can change it, but sometimes as a child you can't. So that's obviously important just because that means there's going to be that possibility for a light to turn on, specifically as it relates to Shabbos. There are other issues which we'll get to as we discuss more. A cochlear implant is different. A cochlear implant is one of the most amazing things. I don't know who invented it. I should have looked that up before, but it really is amazing. Basically, it's generally used for people with more severe to profound hearing loss in one or sometimes even both ears, in which they can't hear either most or all frequencies. So what a cochlear implant is, it's a surgery, obviously. What it is it has, obviously, different parts of it, but basically you have the receiver, I forgot what it's called now, that goes on your ear. It's not... What?
Transceiver.
Is that what it's called? Okay, the transceiver. That picks up the sound, and it sends the sound up into the part that's, you know, attached from the outside on the person's head. Now, inside, that was where the surgery is placed, a magnet that attaches to that part, and the magnet has a line that basically goes all the way to your cochlea, which an electrode is implanted in there. And the idea is basically, generally when you hear, the way it works is, the way you hear is there are these hair fibers in your inner ear, in your cochlea, that are the ones that send the signals to your brain to hear. So usually these people, they don't have hairs. Those hairs don't work, and that's what the electrode replaces. So the idea is you hear the sound. The sound is digitally coded and is sent to, I'm forgetting what this is called. It's sent to the thing that's attached to the magnet, and that goes inside and is sent into the magnet. And then it switches up from a digital code when it goes through into the electrode to an electric code, electric signal, and that electric signal is sent to your brain. That's basically how you hear. so obviously that happens to be fascinating, just in general. Another thing that's just important to know is both cochlear implants and hearing aids, you can change volume. You can raise it, you can lower it. That's a possibility for both. A lot of modern cochlear implants, you can attach them. You can have a Bluetooth to your phone even, so you can, you know, take calls on your cochlear implant. So that obviously is very, very interesting and very new. You can change, you know, your settings based off your phone. It has a lot of cool, I guess, more modern technologies. It used to be a lot of hearing aids. the way you would change the volume, as we'll get to later on, is with like a toggle. Some people still have it, and that would like you raise up, raise down. Nowadays, you press a button on it. So obviously, it's a little bit different, and we'll get into the particulars. Just in terms of describing the, I guess I would say the issue. It's not really an issue, but what's happening, the issue at hand. Something that's very important to think about, bigadol in general, is trying to figure out whether the person who needs a, let's say, hearing aid or cochlear implant is considered a chole, is considered someone who's sick, on one hand, and on the other hand, is the hearing aid, is the cochlear implant considered a refuah? Is that considered like a medicine? Now, this is not clear. It's probably easier to say, you know, you can probably say both ways, I guess. But just to give an example, so Tzitz Eliezer writes in a tshuva in Chelek Yud Beis, in Simen Mem Hei, he writes in a little bit of a different context, but he points out that anyone who's missing something, missing an Aver, whatever it is considered and is different than all other people, is considered a Chole She'en Bo Sakana. So obviously this doesn't mean if you're missing a finger, you're a Chole She'en Bo Sakana. If you were born, you know, with nine fingers or nine toes, that's not what it means. But it means it's something that obviously causes you to not function as well as other people would. You're missing a whole limb, you're missing something like that. So he defines that as a Chole She'en Bo Sakana. That's what Tzitz Eliezer writes. So obviously you would take that and say these cases presumably would be the same thing. This person cannot hear. That being said, it's not as simple as that. Because the Tzitz Eliezer himself writes in a different tshuva, in Chelek Vav, in Simen Vav, so that's a tshuva where he really discusses this issue. He discusses what the poskim discuss, him, the Menchas Yitzchak, has a bunch of tshuvas about this. Is a topic which we're not going to get to, but about tiltal and mukta. You know, are these hearing devices, are these cochlear implants, are they mukta? Are you allowed to carry them on Shabbos? So that's really what they discuss. But in this discussion, so he writes that, I'm going to read you the words. Hinei libi megamgim harbe lavo lahachshiv es acheresh kechol hashem bo sakana. It's very hard for me to describe this person as a chol hashem bo sakana. Ulahatir lo mishum kacha teltel. And therefore, again, the context of the tshuva is to allow him to carry it. Dereshus, he gives two reasons. First reason, kasha etem adavar. Hahanachal lahachshiv ishka zeh she'eno margish begufo shum tzar umichushim. It's very hard to consider this person who has no pain, he doesn't feel anything, nothing hurts him, that person's going to be described as a Chol She'en Bo Sakana. It's very hard, says the Tzitz Eliezer. And Shainis, Zeh Shematzinu Shematzirim B'Chol She'en Bo Sakana, Hu Kishe Hadavar Ba L'Shem Ripoi V'Hatavas HaMichushim V'Hakalas Tzar Acholi. So what does it mean when we allow you to heal a Chol She'en Bo Sakana on Shabbos? That's when what's healing heals the person's aches, his pains, his problems. But this doesn't heal anything. Basically, what the Tzitz Eliezer writes, I think that's, he quotes Reb Kiva Eger, he quotes other people, but basically what he's saying is, you can't consider this a refua for a Chol She'en Bo Sakana, because, for two reasons. Number one, this person may not really be a chola. You know, he's not hurting in any way. And number two, which is probably the more convincing argument, what refuah is this? This isn't a refuah, right? The person's not being healed. There's a sefer called Asya. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It was like one of those publications farm on medical halacha specifically. We don't have it, but I saw the YU library had it. So I happened to see it this morning. So he discusses, has a piece on this. A very short piece, but he points out that this is similar to the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa. The Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa writes in Parak Lama Dalet, in Sif Chav Zayin, that someone who's in a wheelchair, the wheelchair is not considered a refuah for the person. It's not healing that person, it's helping that person. Right? They quote in the footnote there from C. Pesach Frank that if the person can't walk without the wheelchair, then the wheelchair isn't healing him, it's just helping him. So that's the same as this idea where the hearing aid is eight. What?
Wouldn't it be the opposite?
That what?
You're not helping him walk, you're helping him hear him.
But if you would take out the hearing, meaning if you were sick and I gave you Advil, so the Advil now took away that pain, took away the sickness. The hearing aid doesn't necessarily, meaning what he, the way he's comparing it is the hearing aid is like a person whose legs aren't working. Symptoms. Okay, but at least treats the symptoms, and therefore a lot of times the symptoms are the cause of the tsar.
Being rapa, like the person has an infection. The infection is still there. Oh, we're
So the question is, what caused him to make a cholite? Generally speaking, what caused him to make a cholite are the symptoms. The symptoms are the ones that are giving him pain, that are making him uncomfortable, and making him not able to function normally. If you treat the symptoms, you're healing his choli. Now, it may not be in the long run, it may not be able to be. A cold that you're not able to be. If someone has a really bad cold, you can't heal that. But you can treat symptoms. So it's possible that someone who has a really bad cold is called a cholishim bosakana, and when he takes Mucinex or whatever he needs, that's possibly a refuah for that. Now, you're right, that's not literally healing the cold, but it's alleviating the pain, the symptoms. In this case, what the Tzitz Eliezer is saying is that it doesn't do that. So I think the best way to conclude, to look at the picture, is that most probably the actual hearing aid is probably not a refuah. That's not really what it does. It either amplifies the sound, it allows the person, but it's not healing anything, it's not doing anything to the symptoms, the person's not necessarily bitzar. That being said, the person could very possibly be a cholishim bosakana, like the first tshuva we quoted. Because by definition, what a cholishim bosakana, and the way Rav Shastra likes to say it, is if you can't function normally, you're a cholishim bosakana. So if someone has hearing loss in a way that they can't function normally without their aid, then there would be a cholishim bosakana. Now this wouldn't necessarily be a fool, but it's very possible to be magdir, to define this person as a cholishim bosakana. Now it's important to also point out that it's possible that it would go even further, and it's possible that there's a sakana. Right? If someone has profound hearing loss, yeah.
So you say, does sakana have to come from a progression of the condition, or can it come as a result of the condition? Because someone that can't walk and can't get into a wheelchair, the result is that they're stuck in bed. Someone that can hear can get hit by a car.
Yeah. So I'll give you an example. I was speaking about this a while ago with Rav Shechter. And Rav Shechter told me he had a roommate when he was, I think, in MTA. He was almost, I don't know if it was a roommate. He said a roommate in the dormitory. I don't know if that means he was just someone that lived there. But he said he had I don't know what it was. He said he had a hearing aid, a device or whatever, and he was machmir not to walk out with it on Shabbos. And he was crossing a street, and he said there was a driver coming. The driver was honking, and the driver thought that he was just like trying to be funny, and he was just going to run away, and he didn't hear, and he got killed. And he said, so to him, that was a sakana. Right, if someone has hearing loss where they're not going to be able to hear as they're crossing the street, it is a real sakana. There's no question about it.
Is it a chola shesh sakana, or is it a chola, and there's a sakana?
It would be a sakana. It would be a sakana, and therefore he would be obligated to wear it because of the sakana.
But that wouldn't necessarily be having anything to do
with the chola. Correct. Those were two separate points. It's possible to define him as a chola shesh sakana. It's possible that the situation will lead to a sakana, and therefore we'd be obligated to do all these things anyway. Because if it's a sakana, we would do everything. And it's possible that this person, again, if he doesn't have any, severe hearing loss, and it doesn't really affect his function, he just wears a hearing aid because it's easier. So it's possible that person wouldn't even be considered a chola. Those are really the three. Now what's important, for a lot of reasons, but, the Mishnah Berurah points out in Siman Shin Chav Ches, as do the other poskim, that for a chol shein bo sakana, so we allow for refuah. We allow you to heal that person, but in certain situations, we would allow it by an iser drabanan, let's say, but not by a xera drabanan, right? So we would allow you to be rofe. We would allow a refuah if a person is going to need to violate an iser drabanan, but there's a difference between an iser and a xera. So those need to be figured out as to, in each case, what is the iser? What actually is the rabbinic prohibition that we would allow the refuah to happen in these cases? But anyways, again, that's a broader definition, but just to give a broader perspective as to these people. Okay, so first example. So by hearing aid specifically, when a person takes out the hearing aid, so generally speaking, what you do is there's a battery door, and you open up the battery door. The reason you open up the battery door is because every time it's closed, the battery is running. When you open it, you save your battery. That's number one. When you leave the battery door open in certain places, so feedback can come as a result of it. When you don't leave it open, you keep it closed. Feedback can result, depending on where you put it, etc. So the question, that's really the first question. Again, you generally take out your hearing aid, let's say, at night when you go to sleep. So if it's going to cause feedback, so there is an iser drabanan and a prohibition of called hashmas kol, to cause something to be heard. Now, at the beginning of Siman Shin Lamed Ches, the Shulchan Aruch from the Gemara already, but points out that the Isser is really only a kleshir, only when you have, you know, making noise with some sort of musical instrument. The Mishnah Berurah there points out, as do all the poskim, that doesn't literally mean only with an instrument. Also clapping your hands, the Mishnah Berurah points out, doing things that make pleasant noises, even if they're not actually klei shir, even if they're not musical instruments, would be part of this Isser D'Rabbanan, unless you go and fix an instrument, as like a lot of other Isurim. But that's an Isser called Hashmas Kol. Now, obviously, that doesn't apply to our situation, because the hearing aid is not in any way a klei shir, is not in any way making a pleasant sound that person wants. It's making an annoying feedback noise that only people under 40 can hear sometimes. But it's very annoying. So it's definitely not considered that Isser. But, however, it's not so clear, because the Gemara in Shabbos and Yerches tells us that one is, on Erev Shabbos, one is not supposed to put into their wheat into their water mill. The Rechaim Shel Mayim. Right? That, a mill. That's the Rechaim is a mill. Yeah. So you're not allowed to do that on Erev Shabbos, and it will be going on Shabbos. And the question is, why not? What's the prohibition? So it's a machlokas between Rabbah and Rabbi Yosef. Rabbah says the reason it's a problem is because of Hashma'as Kol. Because the mill is going to be running on Shabbos, it's going to be making noise. That noise is an Isser. That's Rabbah. Rabbi Yosef says, no, that's not the reason. Really, the reason why it's Usser is a totally different thing. There's a machlokas beis Shammai and beis Hillel. We know that we're not allowed to do Melach on Shabbos. We know our animals are not allowed to do Melach on Shabbos. There's a machlokas beis Shammai and beis Hillel, whether our possessions, whether our kelim, are allowed to do Melach. Whether there's a concept called Shvisas Kelim. Do I have to allow my possessions to be resting? So beis Hillel says that's not a prohibition. Beis Shammai says it is. So Rabbi Yosef says that's the problem here. The problem here isn't Hashmas Kol, that something's being heard, a noise is being made. The problem is something very different, in that this Gemara is going like Beis Shammai, and because your mill is running on Shabbos, there's an Isser called Shvisas Kelim. You have to let your mill rest on Shabbos. So that's the Machlokas. Again, Rabbi says the problem here is Hashmas Kol, it's making a noise. Rabbi Yosef says the problem here is because your Kelim are just working. There's no problem of Hashmas Kol in such a situation. Good? Again, this situation is different because it started on Friday, right before Shabbos. So the question is how we paskin. Now, the reason why it's important, obviously, is because if you paskin like Rav Yosef, that this is all going like Beis Shammai, and it's all about your kelim need a rest. So number one, we don't paskin that way. Right? We paskin like Beis Hillel, that there's no prohibition. And number two, this situation would have nothing to do with Hashmas Kol, without making noise. So this is a big machlokas in the Rishonim, how we paskin. Tosfos quote from Rabbeinu Tam and Rabbeinu Chananel, I think, that we paskin like Rabbi Yosef. That we paskin really the whole, it's all going like Beis Shammai, and that's the whole reason. Tosos say that's not true, that's not, we paskin like Rabbah. The Beis Yosef in Siman Reish Nun Beis in Sif Hei, that's where the, it comes up in Shulchan Aruch, quotes a whole slew of Rishonim that said we paskin like Rabbah, that the prohibition here is because of Hashma'as Kol, because you're allowing sound to be heard when the mill is running on Shabbos itself. Beis Yosef also quotes the Rambam, the Rif, that may say like Rabbi Yosef, so he quotes a machlokas in the Rishonim. The Shulchan Aruch here, paskins in Reish Nun Beis, and Sif Hei paskins like what he believes the Rambam holds, and that's we paskin like Rabbi Yosef. And since we paskin like Rabbi Yosef, so therefore, there is no prohibition to put your wheat into the mill right before Shabbos. Because why? Because there's no Isser of Hashmas Kol, when I do that on Friday, and there's also no Isser of Shvisas Kelim, because we paskin like Beis Hillel. So if we hold like the Sugya is like Rabbi Yosef, does everyone follow? Make sense? If we hold the Sugya like Rabbi Yosef, that the whole problem of putting it into the mill is nothing to do with making sound. Rather, it's to do with the malacha of your kli. So we don't paskin that way anyway. So therefore, it would be mutter to put something into my rechayim on Erev Shabbos. That's how the Shulchan Aruch paskins. The Ramah, however, is machmir. The Ramah says, we don't paskin that way. We try to be machmir, at least in every situation or every possibility. That we tell someone not to put something, let's say their wheat, into the mill on Friday afternoon if it's going to be running on Shabbos because of the Isser of Hashma'as Kol. We're choshesh that the noise is going to be heard. What's the problem with the noise being heard? So this seems to be, I guess, two different ways of understanding it. The Mishnah Berurah, which is probably the more common approach, actually before that. I mean, that's the machlokas. Shulchan Aruch says we're mekel, there's no problem at all. Ramah says we're machmir. The Ramah adds on, however, that there are situations when it would be totally mutter. If you set an alarm clock, this is a big discussion in the postgame, but before Shabbos, it's mutter to have it on Shabbos. Why? Because anything that's normal for a person to set before Shabbos, and it rings on Shabbos, there's no issue with that. The Rav Al Yashiv writes, he adds a reason to the Raman, his Aros there in the Gemara and Shabbos, that the whole Isser is because Zilusa de Shabbos, because of Zilzel Shabbos, it disgraces Shabbos to have noise being made, and something that's not a Zilzel to Shabbos, like a clock, because everyone knows the clock wasn't a Malacha. You're not, when the mill is running, the reason it's a Zilzel, because everyone looks and, you know, there's a Malacha happening right in front of you. When your Shabbos clock rings that you set up the day before, and it's normal to set up the night before, So that's not an issue. What comes out, though, is the whole reason for the prohibition is because of Zilzel Shabbos. Namely, when you have a sound being made on Shabbos, you're right, there's also an Isser Ashmaskol, but even when that doesn't apply, there's potentially what we call Zilzel Shabbos. There's potentially disgracing Shabbos. And that's how the Mishnah Berurah, that's how Rashi on the Sugya understands the whole Sugya. And the Mishnah Berurah writes this here in Sifkan Memches also. When the Mishnah Berurah discusses, there's one potential other way of looking at it. The Darkei Moshe here quotes from the Agur that the whole reason that it's prohibited is because not because it's a zilzel to Shabbos, but because someone's going to look and think that you turned on the mill on Shabbos, that you did a malacha on Shabbos itself. Now the Mishnah Berurah really puts both of these reasons together. And the Mishnah Berurah here in Sifka Nun says the reason why it's usher for me to put wheat into the mill on Shabbos is because the noise on Shabbos is a zilzel. The noise causes a disgrace. Why is it a disgrace? Because people are going to hear it and say, oh, he turned on his mill on Shabbos. That's the way he understands it. So what comes out is that any time that the malacha is being done by itself in a way that it's normal for it to be done, meaning it's normal for it to start before Shabbos, so there's no zilzel. You set an alarm clock, no one's going to be like, he turned on his alarm clock on Shabbos. Because people know that that's what you do. But when it's not normal, it's a much different situation, and that's where this zilzel, that's where this problem potentially would be. Rav Shlomo Zalman writes in a tshuva, in Chelek Aleph and Simen Tes, he also has something in Chelek Beis, that's the tshuva where he discusses about electricity. He quotes, for anyone who's aware, the Shita of the Chazon Ish, and it's a long tshuva basically discussing that. But he points out a bunch of these things, and he writes that the whole chshash is only, again, there's a chshash of Hashmas Kol, meaning because there's some sort of disgrace, there's some sort of, we're worried that the kol, that the noise that's being made is going to cause some zilzel of Shabbos. So anytime there's something being heard on Shabbos, this is the way Shlomo Zalman has it, a noise being heard on Shabbos, there's potential for zilzel Shabbos, and anytime there's zilzel Shabbos, we're worried that a person is going to be choshed that you did a malacha, any malacha, whether it's turning on a mill or another malacha involved in that process, that's what we're worried about. So therefore, when you have a hearing aid that you know is going to make feedback when you take it out and you put it down, so the question is whether that would be part of this. You're right, in terms of Ashmaskal, it's not a cliche. But if it's really making a noise and everyone's hearing, it's a zilzel, you know, are people going to say, oh, is there some sort of chshad that's going to cause it to be an issue here? What would the chshash be? So it depends what it is. If it's like more of a cochlear implant, and that's really what's making the noise when you take it out, so potentially there are malachos that people think maybe you did, because maybe there are malachos involved in making and taking off the cochlear implant. The same with the hearing aid. If they hear you, they may say, oh, he, you know, opened the battery door, then closed it. He had to press a button to turn it off. Whatever it is. So is there a chshash that we're worried that when they hear the noise, they're going to be choshe that you did what the Rav Shlomo Zalman in that tshuva points out, doesn't have to be malacha d'oraisa, even for a drabana. That's part of the gzeira. The gzeira is that there's some sort of zilzel by the noise being made that people are going to say, oh, you did a malacha. So would that be involved in a hearing aid situation? So it's probably a little more far-fetched, but it is potentially an issue. Even if you think there is a prohibition of Hashmas Kol in such a case, i.e. the zilzel that causes someone to be choshed that you're doing something wrong, presumably this case would be allowed for another reason, namely because of a psikresha on a drabanan. So first of all, it's a psikresha to lo nichalei, right? Because when you take out your hearing aid, so you don't want that feedback. No one wants the feedback. So obviously that becomes, even if it happens automatically, it's at best a psikresha to lo nichalei. And number one, there's a machlokas about a psikresha to lo nichalei. Tosos and Shabbos and Kav Gimel bring from the Aruch, that the Aruch says that that's mutter. We paskin lechatchila, it's aser, and the Mishnah Berurah writes in many places. Okay, so generally speaking, lechatchila, we say it's aser, Apsik Reisha Dlo Nichale. It's a Darabanan, an Isser Darabanan. Nevertheless, what happens if it's on a Darabanan? So I have Apsik Reisha Dlo Nichale, the feedback, I don't want that. But the whole Isser is only Darabanan. Right? The Isser of Hashmas, Kol, Zilzal Shabbos, whatever this Isser is only Darabanan. So what happens with that case is? So the post can discuss this. The Shmir Shabbos Gelchus at the beginning of his Sefer, so he has a lot of the rules of Shabbos, so he writes that it's Aser. He thinks that that's still a problem. Nevertheless, because you do have two Darabanans, now you can rely on another thing, which is called a Shvus de Shvus, in this case, B'makom Tzorech. A Shvus de Shvus is a discussion that the Poskim have as to what exactly that involves, but the way we're going to assume is that it just means two Darabanans. So anytime you have Darabanan A and Darabanan B, so in this case, I took out my hearing aid, so I have a psik reisha dlo nichale, iser drabanan. On an iser drabanan of whatever the iser is going to be of that noise being made, b'makom tzorech, because for this person, you know, this person who's deaf, so it's presumably, right, number one, it's going to be an extraordinarily uncomfortable to sleep within his ear. And number two, he has a lot of, this person is bizarre in some level. You know, he's not able to hear or whatever. So presumably this would be included in those categories of Shulchan Aruch and Simen Shin Chav Ches that writes, B'makom tzara lo gazru rabbanon, when there's tzar, the rabbanon weren't gozer, didn't make any decrees on Shabbos. Shulchan Aruch and Shin Zayin talks about Shvus to Shvus, B'makom tzorech. So presumably you can, you know, combine a lot of these reasons and say that, you know, taking out and causing that feedback probably is not going to be an issue. Probably. Okay, so that's number one. Now, the number two, we don't have so much more time, so we'll try to condense this. But the number two is specific to a cochlear implant. Again, as we pointed out, so the way it works is, let's say at night I take it off. Then in the morning when the person puts it back on, so he's putting on that exterior piece, and he's attaching it to the magnet that's right under his scalp. And that's how, again, the receiver gets the sound. It gives a digital signal. It creates some sort of signal that goes up there to the exterior piece that's attached to the magnet. It goes to the magnet and it sends an electric code all the way in your electrode to your brain, right? I'm sorry if that was confusing, whatever, and got there, right? Right, it goes here to here through down to the electrode and then to your brain. Okay, so next year I'll teach in the medical school also, because it seems like everyone's really picking up on that. Everyone got there, right? Make sense? Okay. So that's the way it works. So when I take it out, basically the way it works is when I put it back, so when it's off, it's nothing for me. But putting back is creating this whole, you know, almost circuit, right? Is creating this whole process. So the question is whether this would be part of the Melacha d'Oreis of Makeh B'Patish. The Mishnah on Shabbos and Ayin Gimel tells us that Makeh B'Patish, namely finishing a Melacha, is a Melacha d'Oreis. That's what the Gemara on Ayin Hay says, that it's finishing Melacha. Anytime you finish a Melacha, that's called Disbe Gmar Melacha. Kol Midi Disbe Gmar Melacha, the Gemara Nayin Hey tells us, Chayv Mishamaka B'Patish, when you finish. And that's how the Rambam Paskins in Perek Yod Halacha Tazayin. The Gemara in Shabbos has a very interesting case on Daf Mem Ches. The Gemara tells us that if someone has a pillow and all the feathers came out of the pillow, so are they allowed to put those feathers back into the pillow? So the Gemara says, concludes, really depends. If we're talking about an old pillow or a new pillow, i.e., if the pillow's old, namely, the pillow was full, the feathers all fell out, so in that case I can put it back into the pillow. But if it's a new pillow, meaning I'm making the pillow, so I have to put the feathers into the pillow in order to create the pillow, in that case it would be a problem, and the issur would be, as Rashi tells us, an issur makeh b'patish, of misakein mana. You're creating a kli. Right, you have nothing, and then you put it in and you created the kli, as opposed to when it was already created and it went out and then you're putting it back in. The Rambam has a different understanding of the sugya, not for now, but that's how Rashi understands the sugya. It's a problem of tikkun mane when, again, it's a new pillow, not when it's an old pillow. So the Shulchan Aruch writes in Or HaChaim, in Simen Shin Memi, he quotes this, that the Lashon is, Muchen Shenaflu Min HaKeses Mutter L'Hachziram, that, you know, the inside of the pillow falls out of the pillow. It's mutter for me to return the pillow, the feathers back into the pillow. Aval aser litnim b'tchila b'keses. But I can't do it originally, i.e. old pillow versus new pillow. Again, the reason is because of tikkun mana. I'm creating some sort of problem. So what comes out is something very interesting. I mean, maybe you can think of another example in a malacha, but you probably can't. I can have two of the exact same actions with the exact same outcomes. And one is an Isser Daraisa and one is not at all. Meaning I can fill a pillow up till it's full. I accomplished that in both situations. I did the same exact action. And yet, in one case it's Chayev, in one case it's Pater. Mutter, not even Pater. Right? Which is a very interesting idea. So what comes out, and this is an important, you know, you saw it, obviously there's a lot more to discuss in terms of Makeh B'Patish, but in terms, when we talk about the Malach of Makeh B'Patish, i.e. finishing a kli, creating a kli, so that is a Malacha that's defined by the totsa'a, by the outcome, not by the action, not by the pe'ula. It's defined about whether the outcome was an outcome that was an item being fixed. So in the first case, when I'm returning the feathers, the outcome is not the same as when I'm creating. Because in the first case, I'm just returning. It was already a full pillow, and now I'm returning it to the full pillow. So that the outcome, when you look at it from that perspective, it's different, because qualitatively it now is the same as it was before, as opposed to the first case when it's a new pillow. So originally it wasn't something, now it is something. But we don't look at the action, we look at the outcome. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank brings this down from Yerushalmi. I saw in Sefer Mikra Kodesh on Shabbos, but the Poskim discussed this at length. What comes out is it really, it needs a few things. Number one, the totsa, the outcome, needs what we call a tikkun rav. You need to be able to fix it, a significant fix to the object. So it's not just fixing an object, but in order to be over on this Isser, I need a significant fix. That's number one. Number two, it needs to, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav writes this in the sugya, in Siman Shin Yud Gimel, that it's not just that it needs to be a significant fix of the outcome, but it needs to last forever. Right, or not literally forever, but it has to be what we'd call a tikkun of umnin. That if an expert did it, it's not going to just last you the day. It's going to last you some time. That's the only way to be over the tikkun mana. So it has to be a totsa'a. It has to be a tikkun rav in the totsa'a. I mean, it has to be a significant fix. And it has to be one that's significant enough where it's going to last and not just be nothing. In that same tshuva that I quoted earlier from Rav Shlomo Zalman, so this is one of the points he argues with the Chazon Ish about electricity. The Chazon Ish thought electricity, a circuit, was bone, Makeh B'Patish, one of them. Bone more probably. But Rav Shlomo Zalman didn't think so, because the way Rav Shlomo Zalman said it was that turning on and off, when I turn off I turn on and off the light all the time. So the electricity obviously isn't created to stay forever, right? Because I'm going to turn it off at the end of the night, or at the end of the day, or in an hour. So because the electricity isn't staying, so it can't be that that's Makeh B'Patish, because that's one of the ways to define Makeh B'Patish, is that it has to last and it has to stay. okay, so now let's figure out by our case. So we have a cochlear implant. So when I return that exterior piece onto my head, and it connects now to that magnet that's on the inside, so what happens is now, you know, the electrode is now at capacity. Now when I hear something, it goes, the signal, the digital signal goes, and then it goes all the way to the electrode, and it becomes an electric signal, and it goes to the brain. Right? So until I do that, it's nothing. Now I put it on, and I create almost like an electric circuit, in a sense very similar. So presumably, would you consider this a significant, a meiserav, a significant thing, or just like a milsa zutrasa? You know, a small little fix. What would you consider it? Suggestions? What would you think?
It's small because you're doing it every day, but it's also technologically.
Exactly. So I think this is why I wanted to stress that first point. In terms of the action you're doing, it's nothing. You're just putting it on your head. But the question is an outcome. That's what we look at it. Was there a significant fix in what happened? So presumably, you could say that there was. Right? When I attached it to the head, so there was some form of significant change, some significant outcome change within my you know, auditory system, at least, this creation of an auditory nerve. Not only that, but also, this is a real, as opposed to the example I gave before, which is the distinction between the Chazon Ish and Shlomo Zalman, is a circuit. You have an electric circuit that's constantly there. So because of that, the Chazon Ish says it's a problem. Rav Shlomo Zalman says no, because you sometimes turn off and sometimes turn on. It's not always there. But in this case, you're actually creating the circuit, right? It's like it's off, and then you're putting it together. Because I'm attaching it to my head, it's almost like putting the... So maybe there, Avshalma Zalman would agree that when I'm actually being mechaberet, when I'm connecting the things, it's one thing if it's connected and I can like turn on and off the electricity. When I'm literally connecting it, and especially it could be the... I don't know the exact facts on the ground, I was trying to find this out, but it could be the electrical signals are constantly there once the electrode's implanted, and just putting on the piece kind of activates it. But even that aside, but you're actually attaching something. So there's more reason to be machmir in such a situation, more than just an electrical, you know, turning on a light with an electrical circuit. And really, you're creating something significant by allowing this person to hear. Obviously, it's an unbelievable modern advancement. And so the question is whether you'd be choshesh, that this is real makabe patish. The other thing, as we pointed out before, on the other hand, I should say, is that the Gemara seemed to say in the Shulchan Aruch Paskin that when I'm returning the feathers to the pillow, that's not makabe patish, because it was already a kli. I'm not doing anything new. As opposed to when I create. So in this case, I already have my cochlear implant. I take it off Friday night. So when I put it back on, I'm just returning it. So is that the same as returning? So these are all, again, different things to think about. We don't have time really to go into them, but those are things to think about. Presumably, though, either way, you can probably be makel for one of two reasons. Number one, the Magen Avraham writes in Simen Shin Yud Gimel and Sifkan Yud Beis, the Taz also writes this in Sifkan Zayin there, and the Poskim discuss this, that if you have a cover, so if you have a cup, let's say, and a cup always has a cover, my daughter's, let's say, her cup that she uses for drinking. So that cover, let's say it was on even harder. You know, you had to like push it down. So the Magen Avraham says, if you're constantly taking it off and putting it back on, that's not called bone, that's not called makabe patish. That's how it was created. The Prima Gadim writes this, b'mefurosh, and Simon Shin Yud Gimel, and Mishvitz Ozov, and Sifkan Zayin, he writes this, that kelim that are made the way that it's supposed to go together and then separate, that's the way they're made. That's not called makabe patish, that's not called bone. If something that's created, the Shulchan Aruch writes this in Shin Yudalid, you know, something that's created that's meant to be destroyed every day, that's also not called bona. So the question here is, and in all those cases, Avshalom Zalman has a tshuva in Chelek Aleph and Simen Yod Aleph, where he discusses this a little bit, and he quotes from the Archos Chaim, and he quotes the Shulchan Aruch Harav, that this would even be mutter midar abanan. It would be totally mutter. And it's something that was created in a way where things, either it's meant to be broken, it's meant to be taken apart, or it's, you know, it naturally falls off, it's not strong, those would be mutter drabanan to put together. So in this case, this is not called a significant building because, number one, you take it off every night. Number two, it can fall off, right? You're not meant to be doing gymnastics with these things, both hearing aids and cochlear implants in your ear. So because of that, it's not a significant binyan, so presumably that's one reason you'd be makel that this wouldn't be called makabe patish. Number two, the Chazon Ish happens to disagree with that. Shlomo Zalman discusses it, but the Chazon Ish disagrees with that and thinks it's still binyan. Even a binyan that's temporary is a problem, is a melacha d'oraisa. Nevertheless, there's probably a second reason. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Shin Yud Gimel and Tzivav that a binyan garua, it's not like a real building, so that's also not going to be a problem. And the question here is whether this would be not a significant building. Just to end off, because we're running a little late, but the Shmir Shabbos Gelchasa writes in Perek Lama Dalet and Sif Chav Ches, so he discusses hearing aids and cochlear implants, and he points out that those things would be mutter to carry on Shabbos. Tiltol, again, that's not what we are discussing, but he points out, and one of the things he says is, it's also once it has to be activated before Shabbos. Once it's activated, I can turn up the volume and lower the volume. So just something, an interesting thing to think about, a question, I guess, to end off with, is, again, in his time, when he's writing this, so the way it was much different, again, as we pointed out before, they were either like toggles, that was pretty much how it worked. And the question is, nowadays, we don't have like a toggle that you go like, I don't know how the toggle works exactly. My assumption is, obviously, there is electric impulses in there, but when you like turn it one way or the other way, so it kind of like opens up or lowers, you know, a piece that's activating to make it go louder or lower. However, nowadays, most of them are electric in that they either have buttons or they're connected to your phone, as we mentioned before, but buttons, both hearing aids and cochlear implants. So in order to raise the volume, I actually have to press a button. So pressing a button in general would be an esedra abanan, some electricity problem. So the question is, Did Rav Shlomo Zalman, when he said you're allowed to lower and raise the volume, was that just with his hearing aids? Or nowadays we have a problem because you have an Issur Drabbanan by raising and lowering them. Now this is very important, and this is the reason why we started with this. We started out saying, we're not sure whether this person is a Chol Hashem Bo Sakana, and this is really a Refuah. So if this is a Chol Hashem Bo Sakana, and this is a Refuah, then you'd be allowed to do this. But if this person is not a Chol Hashem Bo Sakana, or this isn't really a Refuah, so then you have to figure out whether you would be allowed to do this on Shabbos. There are many other issues that come up. Lights are another issue, which we're not going to discuss. Carrying, muktzah. I'm sure there are others I can't think of on the spot. But this is just, I guess, some of the basic issues and then some of the background that comes up. All right, everyone, have a good night.